Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we are joined by one of our favorite guests and a regular guest, Dr. John Duffy. Hi, Dr. Duffy.
Hi, guys. How are you?
John, there's serious things to discuss with you, but really quick, a question we ask all of our guests. Have you had any run-ins with Bruce Springsteen lately?
I'm glad you asked. I did, in fact, talk to Bruce just the other day. He said to say hi.
You really did.
I went to
a book signing, and Bruce Springsteen and you spent a little time together.
It was 2 minutes.
It was
under 2 minutes, and yet it seemed like two of the most important minutes of my life, Wendy.
So what do you say? I know what a fan you are. You've seen him in concert. 15 times, right?
I have.
What do you say to him in that brief time that...
worked hard not to say that. I saw it for about 3 hours in line. What I pictured was, I just want to thank him. I want to thank him for the music. I want to thank him for the memories.
Yeah.
And I was focused solely on that. And that's why the picture is so goofy.
No, you look great.
Well, still.
You seriously look great. I, of course, identified with Bruce Springsteen. I saw him on the River Tour and Born to Run. Strap your legs around the... He mentions Wendy.
Strap your hands across my engines.
I believe is the lyric, right?
And it is to Wendy, right?
It is to Wendy. So yeah. I thought, oh, God, if he only met me, I could say that was about me.
Yeah.
But he was at Books A Million. He's got Born to Run. Is that the name of his new book?
Born to Run is the name of the book, yes.
Dedicated to me, of course.
Sure.
And so we're in the media, and I didn't hear that Bruce was coming to Books A Million till after the event had already sold out.
Right.
So kudos to you for being a huge Bruce fan. You got wind of this, purchased tickets.
Yes.
And it sold out in minutes.
In seconds.
Oh, yeah. There are only 5 cities that he was doing a book tour in.
That's it.
Right.
Chicago was one of them. Yeah. So you jumped on that right away.
Right away. Yeah, and it was honestly, you know, for getting 10, 15 seconds with a guy who's just standing there taking photos.
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
He was cordial to everybody.
I felt like I had a moment with him, and, you know, that's a credit to him because you can't have 1,100 moments in 2 hours, you know?
Right.
So,
oh, good. I'm glad you got to meet him.
It was great.
Doesn't that make you feel good when you meet somebody you've always idolized and they're good people? That makes you feel good.
In less than 2 minutes that you're talking.
Right. Excellent. All right. Now on to the serious stuff.
Yes.
We had another school situation.
Right.
And how exactly does that affect kids and parents when you have something happen like what happened at Ohio State the other day?
It's so striking how quick the reactions are. Within the last 2 days, I have talked to 3 different parents, one a set of parents, talking about, like, should my kid even be away at school? Or next year, should I send my kid away to school? Or is it just not safe enough, you know? And I remember it's reminiscent of what happened at Northern Illinois University about 7 or 8 years ago when there was this shooting in this classroom.
6 killed February 14th, 2008 is when that happened.
Yeah. And it's almost how quickly we forget, because I would have guessed it was 2 killed. I'd forgotten.
I had to look it up.
Yeah. Yeah. But people react really, really strongly with a whole lot of anxiety. So you get anxiety all across the board. The parents are anxious because they're not sure their kids are safe. The kids are worried themselves, and there's so many other things going on campus. Like, if you think about this time of year, kids are getting ready for finals. Some of them are getting ready for their first ever college finals. Some are just adapting. Some are just hearing about sexual assault on campuses and things like that for the first time. So it's not like there's – and binge drinking and things like that. It's not like this is the only thing going on campus. And then you add this, and this becomes the crisis. And the counseling and psych services programs, I guarantee you, at Ohio State right now are flooded with kids who had nothing to do with the incident and probably were nowhere near it. There's 60,000 kids there, but are still affected by it and still anxious about it.
Well, imagine one of 60,000, even if you weren't there, somebody infiltrated your school and took lives.
Yeah.
Actually didn't, injured people. It's so scary to think about. When that came out in the news, Bill, I said to you, Michael's going to a junior college. But you know what? It can happen at a junior college, too.
It can happen anywhere. It could happen on Michigan Avenue here.
Yeah.
You just never know. And so I think you have to be, once you can get the crisis out of your mind, which takes a while, I think you have to be kind of just reasonable about the fact that it can happen anywhere. You've taught your kids to be smart and capable and competent and resilient, and they're kind of coached through these things. I don't know if you saw what they call the Buckeye alerts, but they kind of coach the kids through specifically what to do. And that came out within a minute or two of this happening, you know, which is an amazing use of the technology that's available.
But
now,
John, it's flawed to some extent. And I'm trying to remember, there's been so many incidents similar to this in the last couple of years, but one not too long ago, remember we were hearing conflicting reports. Some of the alerts were saying, get out of the building. Others were saying, stay in the building.
Right,
right.
So you don't know in the heat of the moment.
But that was only one real case that I heard of where there was some kind of confusion.
Yeah.
What's good is, like, when your kid goes to that school, a parent can register for these alerts too.
Right.
So, like, if you're home in Illinois and you get wind of this, it's scary, but boy, you could text your kid right away, are you okay?
Right.
And hopefully they respond immediately.
Quickly. Right. And that wasn't true not that long ago. And to your point, Bill, I get your point that, you know, like, there's so much information. This was a shooting before it was a stabbing, right?
I mean, they were saying active shooter, and that wasn't the case at all.
Right. But at the very least, you know, regardless of the veracity of the detail, kids knew to hunker down, right?
The
kids knew, like, okay, I have to barricade myself in this classroom. I got to stay inside. So at the very least, even if the information wasn't great, the directives were towards safety, which I think is a good thing.
Are you able to pull out, when counseling anybody who has concerns about these, and they're valid concerns, but are you able to say, it really is a numbers game? Yeah, this happened, and it does happen with some frequency, but the odds are so far against you ever being near a situation like this. Does that even make sense to say that?
It makes sense after a while. In the immediate aftermath, I think mostly, you know, from where I sit and from where any therapist sits, I think you have to at least give some credence to the fact that, yeah, this is scary. This is anxiety provoking. And to Wendy's point, you know, like, this can happen anywhere at any time, and we have to be alert and aware to that. The likelihood of it happening is incredibly slim, right?
Sure.
And it can happen anywhere. So, you know, like, if you're, like, I was talking to these parents yesterday, and my press was, I think you're going to want to send your kid away to school. I don't think this is a good reason not to, you know, because then their lives are based in fear. A big decision in their life is based in just fear of something that is super unlikely to happen. And on some level, kids, and I've worked with kids who've said this, feel like it's a little bit of a show of no confidence in their ability to manage a situation.
Yeah.
Not that anybody knows how to manage a situation like this very well, but they want the opportunity to get out there and see the world. And I think the more we isolate and hunker down, the less effective that is.
Right.
Yeah. Conversely, what if a kid says to their parents, I want to come home, I can't deal with this? What do you tell that student?
Let's say it were Ohio State and it were 2 days ago. My bias would be, hey, on every campus in America that I'm aware of, there is a CAPS program, Counseling and Psych Services. Have your kid go to that CAPS program. Even if they never make it to another class this semester, worst case scenario, if they go to that program and they're part of it, then they're acclimated to the campus. The minute you pull them out, getting them back out there into the world is really, really difficult.
And yeah, think about that. Their grades might suffer for the rest of this year, but to have them stay there and kind of conquer the fear is really amazing.
It's easy to say from where
I typically
sit, right? I mean, right? No, but for parents, I think that's really difficult. But large picture, you know, does this semester really, really matter all that much in the scheme of their lives? No, probably not. But staying on campus and staying in the game, that probably does. That's more important to my thinking, you know, if you kind of take 5 years instead of 2 months into consideration.
John, schools have wrestled with the idea of weighing grades based on if something traumatic has happened. I know some schools do something where if your roommate does something horrible,
right,
they give you passing
complimentary
grades. I've
never
heard of that. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a very well-known thing. And I'm not even sure whether it's true across the board, but if your roommate passes away or something tragic happens, then you will get the rumor is you get straight A's. I think it's that you get passing grades.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
I think Bill's got it right.
What if you had a D going and we're just going to give you an A.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's quite like that.
Yeah. John, hold that thought. John Duffy's here. We're talking about the aftermath of what happened at Ohio State and how to handle a situation like this with your kids. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We are talking with Dr. John Duffy. He is a clinical psychologist, a great therapist to many, and
a Springsteen fan, he wants us to say also.
Yeah, I'd like to start with it. Can we open with that?
Yeah, we could open with that, sure.
Well, drjohnduffy.com is his website, and the book is called The Available Parent, and his new book will be called The Biggest Springsteen Fan.
Right, right, a pop-up book. Make up your own jokes.
Oh, my God.
All right, so we've gotten through this, and then at some point you have to say to anybody who's concerned, even though Ohio State is over, these things will continue to happen.
Yep.
So you just have to, as the government continues to tell us, remain vigilant and always have an escape route, I guess, right?
Remain vigilant, have an escape route, and always know what your resources are on the back end. You know, like too often I find that kids kind of suffer this stuff alone. So, you know, like that's why I keep pressing this CAPS program thing or seeking out some kind of therapy if, in fact, your kid is traumatized by it. And it's not always readily apparent because you think like, you know, well, those kids that were on that square, those kids need therapy because they witnessed something. They witnessed a stabbing. They witnessed a shooting after the police officer arrived. But there are kids in classrooms 2 miles away or 200 miles away who, you know, were brittle to begin with, maybe not particularly resilient and feeling the after effects nonetheless and are anxious too. Those kids might need some help as well.
Yeah.
Well, what is that called? Survivor guilt?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. You're in a building, you know, across the quad, and you're like, that could have been me. I know it's unreasonable, but you're not thinking rationally when something irrational goes on.
That's right. And there's nothing less rational than the anxiety of, you know, well, I'm on a different campus and a different place altogether, yet I think this could happen to me. But I have to tell you guys, I will meet kids this Christmas season who come home from school and tell me that this drove anxiety in them, even
I'm
though
sure
they were nowhere near Ohio State.
I'm positive of that.
Yeah.
How do you get rid of this for these kids who were on the campus? And it's not just this story, but wherever there's a scene where something horrible has taken place, for some people, every time they pass that particular place, it registers. Oh,
yeah.
This is where that car accident happened.
Right.
This is where somebody got shot. How do you rid yourself of that?
You know, sometimes you'll drive down a road and you'll see memorials here and there, like with crosses and flowers and things
W
like that.
And W flags I've noticed all over.
And W
lately.
Flags now, right? Yeah, sure. Even in our neighborhood, some W flags in memorial of somebody.
Yeah.
And I think some kind of a ritual, even on that spot, whether if they hold a vigil on that spot, which I would imagine that if that hasn't happened already, that will happen. Something to kind of not a corrective experience necessarily, but just something that kind of honors the moment so that location can move on and be, because I think it's a central part of campus. And if it becomes defined solely by this moment, then I think people are kind of like re-traumatized every time they pass by. But if there's a kind of a cleansing ritual that, you know, if there's a candlelight vigil or something that honors anybody who is hurt and the trauma of the moment, then I think people can, with a little more ease, go by that spot. You know, it might not be perfect and it won't be perfect for a while.
Sure.
And time does tend to heal these things.
Yeah.
You know, I would imagine that classroom at Northern has a plaque outside of it and people don't think of it a whole lot, even walking in there, you know.
Yeah.
And I suspect that'll happen here as well.
Kind of like to put some closure on it if you do a candlelight vigil. It's like, okay, we don't like it, but we've accepted it, and life does go on.
Right, right.
So kids come home for Christmas break. I guess it doesn't happen to upperclassmen, but say freshmen who have gone to college for the first time. They've come home for fall break and stuff, but Christmas break, there's something pulling at the heartstrings. Do you ever hear of students who don't want to go back because they're just like, oh, my God, the comforts of home. I'm not ready.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I
every
common.
Single year, you know, sometimes there are kids, often there are kids who we have a hard time just getting out the door into school in the first place. And Christmas break always makes me anxious for those kids because you get this month where you hunker back down at home. And so I worry about that a lot. And I encourage parents to always kind of keep in mind, you know, like, this is temporary. You know, right. Like, as much as you want this to feel like a permanent thing, this is going to be temporary. And, you know, we need to reconfigure home as that campus out there, that dorm room out there, or that fraternity or sorority, not this house.
So maybe a couple days before they go back to school, tell them to, you know, get dressed and not stay in their pajamas all day.
You got to ease into it. Just like we do this with our, you know, middle schoolers and high schoolers, yeah. You know, like kind of get them back in the swing of things a little bit ahead of time. Absolutely. Great idea.
Bill, I can't speak for you, but I hoard all my vacation days and take them at the end of the year.
Uh-huh.
And there's something great about hunkering down. And as much as I love this job more than anything in the world and love working with Bill, it's still like, ah, oh, crap, I got to go back
yeah,
to work.
Right.
Right.
It's, you know, Kylie is loving New York, and yet, you know, she came in for the week for Thanksgiving, and she got very emotional about going back, and we kept saying, but you love it there. And she goes, I do love it there, but this.
No place like home.
Yeah.
Right. And I think those two things can exist in the same lens, you know,
yeah.
and still be okay, right? That,
yeah.
you know, yeah, you love it here, and it's bittersweet to leave, but you'll be back here,
yeah.
too, you
yeah.
know? Yeah.
That's John Duffy. His book is The Available Parent. You could get it for somebody as a Christmas gift.
It's a great one.
Right?
Great
Why
Christmas gift. Of course.
You could wrap a book like that.
Why
give
not?
It to somebody with a card. I would do that. Why not?
Pair it up with a Springsteen book.
Well,
you're good
yeah.
to go. I mean,
that's
done.
That's a good gift. John, thank you.
Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It. We'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.